doing their jobs. We gathered in a small conference room belonging to the Trump Organization. It was blandly decorated and had been outfitted with a temporary heavy gold ceiling-to-floor curtain to block the glass wall that would otherwise show our meeting to the hallway. The president-elect entered the room on time, followed by the vice president-elect and the rest of the designated senior White House team. This was the first time I'd ever seen Donald Trump face-to-face. He appeared shorter than he seemed on a debate stage with Hillary Clinton. Otherwise, as I looked at the president-elect, I was struck that he looked exactly the same in person as on television, which surprised me because people most often look different in person. His suit jacket was open, and his tie too long, as usual. His face appeared slightly orange, with bright white half-moons under his eyes, where I assumed he placed small tanning goggles, and impressively coiffed bright blonde hair, which upon close inspection looked to be all his. I remember wondering how long it must take him in the morning to get that done. As he extended his hand, I made a mental note to check its size. It was smaller than mine, but did not seem unusually so. Trump brought his entire senior team into the small conference room. Vice President-elect Mike Pence, Chief of Staff Reince Priebus, National Security Advisor Mike Flynn, and Press Secretary Sean Spicer sat at the Oval Conference table, with Trump and Pence seated at opposite ends. They were quiet and serious. As we shook hands, the Vice President-elect held the handshake an extra few seconds and said my first name, drawing it out, Jim. It struck me as an odd combination of someone greeting an old friend and consoling that friend. I don't think we had ever met, although I recall our speaking on the phone once 14 years earlier, in 2003, when I was United States Attorney in Manhattan and we were investigating a guy who registered common misspellings of popular children's websites so that when a child mistyped Disneyland.com or BobTheBuilder.com, they were directed to a pornography website. My reaction was, that should be a crime. When I found out it had become a federal crime only months earlier, I asked for the contact information of the member of Congress responsible for the Truth in Domain Names Act so I could thank that person. It turned out to be Indiana Congressman Mike Pence, who told me on the phone that he had pushed for the law after one of his own children was redirected in that sick way. Director Clapper sat closest to the president-elect, with CIA Director John Brennan, NSA Director Mike Rogers, and me to his right. Against the wall behind me sat Trump's future CIA Director Mike Pompeo and designated Homeland Security Advisor Tom Bossert and Deputy National Security Advisor K.T. McFarland. The President-elect's CIA intelligence briefer, a career employee assigned to deliver regular intelligence briefings to the incoming president, was also in the room to take notes. By this point, I had worked relatively closely with two presidents, in addition to scores of other leaders in government. I was curious to see how Trump, the classic fish out of water, would operate in a totally foreign role. Running a private, family-held company is, of course, quite different from running a nation, or even running a large public corporation. You have to deal with various constituencies who don't report to you, and to live under a web of laws and regulations that don't apply to a typical CEO. As I'd seen from other leaders, being confident enough to be humble, comfortable in your own skin, is at the heart of effective leadership. That humility makes a whole lot of things possible, none more important than a single humble question. What am I missing? Good leaders constantly worry about their limited ability to see. To rise above those limitations, good leaders exercise judgment, which is a different thing from intelligence. Intelligence is the ability to solve a problem, to decipher a riddle, to master a set of facts. Judgment is the ability to orbit a problem or a set of facts and see it as it might be seen through other eyes, by observers with different biases, motives, and backgrounds. It is also the ability to take a set of facts and move it in place and time, perhaps to a hearing room or a courtroom months or years in the future, or to the newsroom of a major publication or the boardroom of a competitor. Intelligence is the ability to collect and report what the documents and witnesses say. Judgment is the ability to say what those same facts mean and what effect they will have on other audiences. In my first meeting with Trump, I looked to see how he struck that balance of confidence and humility, and whether he showed signs of having sound judgment. I confess I was skeptical going in. My impression from the campaign was that he was a deeply insecure man, which made it impossible for him to demonstrate humility, and that he seemed very unlikely to be confident and humble enough to ask the "what am I missing" question at the heart of sound judgment. But I didn't see enough at Trump Tower that day to see whether that assessment was correct or not. The president-elect was appropriately subdued and serious. Director Clapper presented the intelligence community assessment, just as he had to President Obama and the Gang of Eight. There were a few questions and comments, most of which came from Tom Bossert in the back row. During the discussion of Russia's involvement in the election, I recall Trump listening without interrupting and asking only one question, which was really more of a statement. "But you found there was no impact on the result, right?" Clapper replied that we had done no such analysis, which was not our business or expertise. What we could say is that we found no evidence of alteration of the vote count. What I found telling was what Trump and his team didn't ask. They were about to lead a country that had been attacked by a foreign adversary, yet they had no questions about what the future Russian threat might be. Nor did they ask how the United States might prepare itself to meet that threat. Instead, with the four of us still in our seats, including two outgoing Obama appointees, the president-elect and his team shifted immediately into a strategy session about messaging on Russia, about how they could spin what we just told them. Speaking as if we weren't there, Priebus began describing what a press statement about this meeting might look like. The Trump team, led by Priebus, with Pence, Spicer, and Trump jumping in, debated how to position these findings for maximum political advantage. They were keen to emphasize that there was no impact on the vote, meaning that the Russians hadn't elected Trump. Clapper interjected to remind them of what he had said about 60 seconds earlier. The intelligence community did not analyze American politics, and we had not offered a view on that. I had been in many intelligence briefings with the two previous presidents, and had never seen Presidents Bush or Obama discuss communications and political strategy in front of intelligence community leaders. There had always been a line. The intelligence community does facts. The White House does politics and spin, and does it on its own. The searing lesson of the Iraq War, based on bad intelligence about weapons of mass destruction, was never mix the two. I tried to tell myself that maybe this was because Trump and his team had little experience on these matters. Trump, of course, had no experience in government whatsoever. But in an instant, the line between intelligence and politics began to fade. As I was sitting there, the strangest image filled my mind. I kept pushing it away because